watching me.
Schmongish board of cups and glasses. I think my plastic cup sounded the best.
Yeah, it was kind of a nice earthen thud.
Welcome,
Ghost Welcome. Pia
Episode 37, we think.
Sure.
We're estimating.
36, 37. It's not 40.
We're on a string of a little bit different formats. I'm sure Ryan's confused. He's like, why am I at the table?
Yeah.
He's thrown off.
I don't have to be silent for 20 minutes.
No. Amazing. We realized, actually, it's one of those things where...
People don't like us.
We've learned a lot over this, and it's the stock and trade of our personalities.
Who's
carried us less far than we thought it did.
Who's sending you guys emails?
That's the weird thing. That's the weird. Jacob gets emails about how we should quit doing it. We get nothing.
We get
dirty looks.
Who's shooting Jacob emails?
It's like a benign.
He could have been making that up, I guess.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did make it up just to make us feel worse. But he knew that he could make us feel worse by saying that he was getting emails that
getting
were just
mail.
Dissing him. In the podcast.
He's seeing the cracks and he's working.
People hate us.
He's just
enough to email.
Chipping
or
away.
Or tweet.
Chipping away.
We've mentioned our Twitter handles, at least in the episode description. Do you know how many tweets I've gotten correlating to Ghost P?
At least five.
At least five
followers.
From
followers.
Guests that are like, hey, we had a really great time on Ghost P with Kit Collins.
No, you tweeted out that they were on it, and you tweet the link, and they just favored it. They don't retweet
it. They don't even retweet it. And it's like, oh, well.
I might be guilty of this, but I don't use Twitter, so.
Well, that makes you less guilty of it.
Sure.
So this is our first Thanksgiving edition of Ghost P.
Oh, so it is. What are you guys thankful for?
Oh, wow. Nobody's asked me that.
Thanks for asking.
I know.
We had a whole dinner and nobody asked anybody. What are you thankful for?
I had a dinner with my family and it was nice, but we never broke down what we were thankful for.
At your family dinner?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you went on Thanksgiving with your family.
I had it with my mother and her husband and my little brother.
Right.
And so...
Nice little Holland Thanksgiving dinner.
That's the Sheeran side.
Sheeran Holland.
There were
two Hollands there.
Gives a shit about the Sheerans. Come on.
Wow.
I did not say that, Nick's mom.
I didn't say that either.
Not Nick's friend.
I'm just saying,
just
as
the
a
guest.
Friend, I'm invested in the Hollands. The Sheerans never liked them. I'm sorry.
Wow.
It just...
I hope this isn't one of the ones... My mom will occasionally listen to, like, the beginnings of some of the episodes of Ghost Baby.
She's like, that Ryan Noel has a real attitude.
That they really... I think one side of your family is a dick.
I just Erdman'd your mom.
Well, you didn't call her Diane, though.
Sure.
So you didn't fully Erdman her.
Well, okay. Yeah.
So that was your Thanksgiving day.
I didn't.
What'd you do Thanksgiving day?
My Thanksgiving was a little odd. So my family is on all corners of the earth at this point.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I just hung out with
the earth is a sphere, though. You know that, right?
What he means by corners.
No.
China, Russia, India, okay. U.S. Everybody knows
point
that.
Point one, Stevie
corners.
Wonder can see. Point two,
A.
Earth is flat. And a square.
If A
FYI.
Equals B. If A equals B.
Right. Yeah. I'm not saying those two points are related. I'm just saying they're related. So, I spent the holiday in Denver with my girlfriend and her dad.
Did you have turkey?
We did. We went to a schmancy 4-star restaurant.
Oh. To eat turkey.
To eat. Well, that's the thing.
Did you wear a tie? Did you wear your suit?
I didn't. Your lounge suit? I looked like a really low-level mobster. I wore a tracksuit. It was pretty bad.
You nice. Wore a tracksuit to yeah. Thanksgiving dinner at a 4-star restaurant?
How happy is that's the most mobster thing.
Probably less than pleased, but the exterior is cordial. So, I mean, I was willing to pay for the 4-star. First restaurant. Thing was,
he had to pay. He had wearing a tracksuit.
I'm clearly
unless he'd had chains on. Unless Ryan had gold chains on.
Well, I look
just
like
just pay for a meal with a gold chain someday. That's a goal.
I'm not talking about like mob heavy. I'm talking about like Fredo.
Mob light. Yeah,
yeah, like Fredo level.
No offense, but by looking at you,
so slightly yeah. mentally handicapped.
Whoa,
you're my brother, Fredo. I loved you. I loved you, Fredo.
I meant kind of awkward and unintimidating, but if you...
No, Fredo had some deficiencies, I think.
Did he?
Yeah, go back
I always
it.
Got the You'll sense that he wasn't all there. Yeah, you always kind of had to... I actually, too...
I worked in social book, work. I can pick up
In the book, things. The Godfather, it kind of suggested gently that Fredo wasn't all
in
there.
In the 70s, it was either. A gentle really? Suggestion.
That's why, well, that's why he was... He
Fredo's
was,
a little slow, huh?
Yeah, Mario Puzo... Just wrote in like a handful of lines. It's been several years since I read The Godfather, but it was this thing where it was like, oh, Fredo's got a little bit of a different composition. Why don't we send Sonny off after this one?
Yeah, Fredo can't do this. Come on.
The phrase, what are you touted, can only be taken so many ways.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. It was basically, yeah, it was like Fredo was at least... Nowhere near as well equipped for handling the family business as anyone in the family or remotely connected to the family.
So that actor, I can't remember his name, John...
They played Fredo?
Yeah, they played Fredo. No he idea. Was in like 4 movies, tops, and there was a documentary that came out about his life. Yeah, 2 years ago or so. And it's all about...
Tom was never quite all there as an actor.
Well, it was basically like, he was only in 4 movies, but... What a career. What 4 movies those were. And it's like 2 hours of people like, that scene where he walked in and said the line.
Killed
something,
it.
Something.
So is that guy dead by now?
He died after the 4th movie. He died of like lung cancer. Or something.
Oh, so he had an excuse to not
Yeah, he had a pretty good.
Movies.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I probably should have added that in.
You kind of undersold it as though it was like, they were like. Tom, this isn't really working out. This is going to be the last motion picture you're ever going to be.
And he's like, that's fine. I
diabetes. Tell you what. That's I cool. tell you what. 30 years from now, someday. There's going to be a 2-hour long documentary about what I could have been. I swear.
I think all we're saying is, you know, as Ghost Pee, is you don't want to compare yourself to Fredo. I think that's all we're really
Fair
driving
enough.
At.
Fair enough.
Of course...
Especially when
we probably alienated the small community of our listeners that considered Fredo their favorite Corleone brother. Yeah. And it'll turn out.
What are they talking about? Fredo was the best Corleone brother.
I'm going to write an email to Jacob right now.
That's at beerandbanter@gmail.com.
No, is it Beer and Banter?
Who knows?
First they monologue for 20 minutes, and now this goddamn Fredo bashing.
I thought they got better when they started having the guests talk right up front, but they could only take pot shots at what little I believe in. I'm just making assumptions about podcast listeners.
Do they sell Fredo posters?
So we had the first Thanksgiving we've ever had where we weren't with family.
Yeah.
That I could remember ever.
It's a little, likewise, it's a
like,
little odd.
Not mine or her family, like we just hung out here at the house and...
Yeah.
It was just another day.
Yeah, it's a little. It's
it
a little
didn't
lonely.
Seem sacrilegious or anything to me.
A little brutal.
Yeah, was it for you?
Well,
I just watched a lot of Tosh and you know, walked to the store and did some shopping.
It's not a real holiday in the sense that you know anything significant or good happened. Really,
we went to an Indian restaurant and had
really?
Dinner with the real Indians, and their Thanksgiving dinner is a lot different than what I imagine the traditional Indian.
Let's,
Thanksgiving dinner.
Let's reel this in a bit. When you say real Indians, what are we...
From India, right?
Real Indians.
Isn't India. That what Indians are?
Well, it depends. Some some American Indian tribes still...
But they come from India, right?
No. No.
Like, not at all?
No, like, there are Native American tribes who have adopted the name Indian.
So I'm not
you
following.
Still have to.
I'm not following at all.
Does
if
this
they're
have
not
to
from
do with
India,
the Underground Railroad?
If they're not from
like
India, how are they Indians?
Program?
I'm not following.
Well, because you know,
they served a spicy rice
it.
Dish with lamb. Mm. And I was like, this is a, I'm used to having turkey.
Is it vindaloo?
So obviously some of their customs have changed since the first Thanksgiving dinner.
Sure.
Yeah, because I wonder what they were doing when the pilgrims weren't landing on their shore. And they were like, hey, we thought some guys were going to get here.
Well, see, Thanksgiving...
Guess we'll just have curry instead.
...is really a celebration of the most misallocated generosity ever.
Right.
I should have just let the fuckers die.
Some people made a huge mistake hundreds of years ago.
Exactly.
And now also... take advantage of the great sales.
Right.
Nick and I were reflecting on Thanksgiving now and how people are worried about other, like, species coming to Earth, aliens, that sort of thing. It's like, we could learn from history. We've already taken care of that. We just sneeze on any aliens that come here.
Yeah,
aren't we worried about that them. On Independence Day, not on Thanksgiving? Is that a new thing?
Well, no, just, Earth, like, if it were to ever happen again. Like, that's our greatest power. It's like, we'll just show up somewhere and sneeze on people.
Yeah, you just take, like, if, especially
colonize
if they
Mars
showed up
find people.
In Thanksgiving.
Problem
like, cold
this.
And flu season, and I just sneezed my hand and
I'm
just
like,
slapped them in the face.
I'm like,
I give you 2 weeks, bud. 2 weeks. That common cold is going to mess
good luck.
You up. Yeah.
I think the issue, though, is that I think if aliens arrive on Earth, unlike most Hollywood depictions, I don't think they'll be completely naked. I think they'll probably bring some sort of environmental protective thing.
Well,
they came all the
like
way
a suit,
here.
Like a suit?
Yeah,
like
a moon
suit.
Suit
type
maybe
thing.
Like a film even. But
you know what? Here's
counterpoint?
Main problem. Yeah, a counterpoint
sure.
to this.
Late on
is,
us.
That, you know, H.G. Wells, his story was entirely that. Was that they were well contained in, like, the tripods.
They
and then
clearly weren't.
As
like,
soon as you broke it,
why
at
did
all,
you make it airtight? Like, why didn't you make it airtight? Because obviously, they didn't. They were huffing earth air this whole time.
Yeah, but through filtration systems. I mean, well, the thing is that every alien
is there a
race
deleted scene
that
I'm
makes
not
it,
aware of?
I don't know.
Alien
I don't
race,
know what's happening.
It depends if you're watching the Tom Cruise version or not, because your whole airtight thing
like,
is
where the
like,
little snake eyeball thing is going through the room,
and he gets
and
sucked
and,
up into
and
it.
And Dakota Fanning are whispering about like they probably have some sort of filtration system that keeps them from you know breathing.
It's when they get pulled up into a thing. There's clearly some orifices you can get sucked into.
All right. Well, I'm gonna.
You're gonna double down. You're gonna double down.
I'm just
gonna
say,
alien
it is the
logic.
Second stupidest alien thwarting.
Trope.
Yes.
Okay.
Next to signs in which they are allergic to water.
Right.
Don't come here.
I was actually watching just some of Battle Los Angeles, which is like an Aaron Eckhart movie. No, they're actually using water as fuel for their ships.
The aliens
as
were?
Something for themselves, and they're also like they may be using it to power their own bodies. And they were laying this down like it was super foreign. I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. That just makes them sound like a much better version of us.
Yeah.
If they figured out how it powers their own bodies and yet also how to make that into some sort of propulsion system fuel, it's like...
I gotta say.
I think they've got us beat,
yeah,
guys.
And
like,
they've earned it.
Yeah.
At that point.
Well, that's kind of the thing is that, you know, aliens, until you get into... ancient alien type stuff of aliens being like, hey guys, want to learn how to build some pyramids?
I've watched an episode of Nick's Ancient Aliens on
it's
the
not
History
mine,
channel.
It's just on the History
believes
channel.
In
Nick
and I'm
Collins.
Like, come on, man, come
Nick
on.
Nick Collins, Ancient Aliens.
The reaches they make on that
the
program
system,
are
Nick Collins.
Unbelievable.
I don't believe in it. I'm just like, Oh, here's a pretty good... It's,
you
it's
watch
one of those
it.
Things,
you watch
it's one
it.
Of those things where you want to sit down with any Bible-thumping type person and then just be like, oh, my God, that makes a lot of sense,
yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, shit, you know? Because it's these stories where it's like, basically, if I did believe in the Bible, then it wouldn't be that hard. The Ancient Aliens
sure.
seems to have a bunch more... The funny, my favorite part about Ancient Aliens is... The general dishevelment and bad haircuts and crazy eccentric dress of
yeah,
all
of
the
experts
they bring on
yeah.
to the show really discredit their arguments before they even open their mouth. It's like, you know,
part.
If you had gotten a haircut in years or like if you looked like someone had given you clearance on the way you
right.
dressed yourself.
Or that anyone tolerates your company for
right.
more than 5 minutes. Yeah. I think the best part, like, if you want the title of cryptozoologist, you don't need any accreditation. We're all now cryptozoologists. I'm doing
right.
I
made that claim for myself.
Sure.
Quite a while ago. Yeah.
No. Have you guys ever heard of Africa Bambaataa?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's a late 70s, early 80s hip hop guy. I read an interview
with him. You haven't heard of him either.
I've heard of him.
You're trying to fit in on the podcast.
I know. I've heard of him.
This is a place of honesty, Nick.
What the fuck?
We have more eccentric music tastes than you do.
Just because you want to associate with how smart Ryan is doesn't mean you have to lie about knowing some mid-80s.
Ryan sounds like an idiot, but he's also smarter than me.
What are you talking about?
Everybody gets...
You're insulting a guest?
Hey.
All right, keep going. I've never heard of. Sure. Okay. Never fucking heard of.
I just start stringing syllables together, and if I don't stop with the big words, it doesn't matter if I make sense or not. People's eyes glaze over, and I know they just think, oh, this is too smart.
See, that's
really,
my whole game, too.
It's gibberish.
Yeah. No, but that's why when Ryan and I hang out together for more than 15 minutes, mm-hmm. it's like chess masters, Russian grand chess masters, who only know how to play checkers.
It's true.
You know?
It's true. Yeah.
Black Friday, do some shopping?
A little bit online.
Yeah, online. Why would you do anything else? No,
you didn't wait till Cyber Monday?
Who are these people?
Dingus?
See, it was dumb. Admittedly, it was
Dingus?
Dumb.
Dingus?
I don't know.
Jesus.
But...
Guy doesn't even
so
know
will you go back
America.
And check to see if you could have saved more money
sure.
on Monday? You'll go
you
back and
will
see, like,
do that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's even dumber.
Oh, yeah. Hey,
I don't think it'll be any different.
I need that guilt. That's what keeps me alive.
Okay.
The minute I start feeling good about myself, I'm just going to turn to dust and blow away in the wind.
Oh, no, folks, he's still here. He doesn't feel that good.
No.
He doesn't feel particularly good.
Still beating
all right, so we're getting a bit of a pattern here on the podcast. We've had a string of guests who are also going to be in a little documentary.
A DVD, maybe.
A DVD, probably. Come on, let's be real.
It might be on DVD.
It's going to be on a DVD.
I don't think so.
I'm going to ask them to make
evil.
Me one copy of the DVD.
And then you just going to wave like, it in my fucking face.
I'm on a DVD,
no. Okay, 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 you're on a
you
DVD.
Technically, Weston, that's a Blu-ray.
They burned it on a Blu-ray.
It's
not
I love
a DVD.
A Blu-ray.
It's an audio-only CD.
High def? I think I would come off looking pretty good in this documentary if it was in high def. Against Dan Jacob. Ryan,
you're
me.
Not really batting Mike. Against, you know, an impressive.
This is what I'm saying. This
yeah.
is my
Mike,
opportunity.
You're comparatively,
Mike's
yeah.
a good looking
Adonis.
He'll be wearing a hat. He'll
he
be
will be.
Mike's
drunk.
Got the beard, and
he's got the
he
covered
often,
up kind of thing.
Yeah, he often has the suit.
I'll have a haircut, like a fresh haircut.
How unpleasantly surprised you know, are you going to be?
Iron
when
jeans.
I just make best for. I weasel my way in. In a way that not
I won't
even
be.
Erdman
It'll
knew.
Be great.
Not even
great.
Erdman knew. And
I think that's what we
there
should do.
All the time.
That's what we should
I'll just
do.
Be around all the time at it. They'll be asking me. It'll be like during your guys' sets at the shows they've specially put up, and then I'll just have the camera pan over to me. It'll be like
I prefer you one by one usurp each person on the show.
Let's
so
plan
the
ghost peek who. It's a ghost peek who. We just come in and we're like secretly. All right, here we go.
Here we go. Throw it to me.
Until eventually, everyone at the table is just you. Just talking to yourself, and that's the end of the movie. It's
like, we did not see that
multiplicity.
Turn. He wasn't even starring him.
He's not even mentioned. Yeah. Hey, who was that guy?
Who is this fucking guy?
Special thanks to Ghostby. I'm like, was he one of those guys? Is that the thing that he was doing? What do you think about this? What do you think about what's...
I am great.
So, Jacob approached you through, like, email? And what
yeah.
was your initial reaction?
Who's doing it? Why? What do they want to do? I am deeply skeptical.
Yeah.
How much work do I need to do? That was why I was actually grateful that he didn't approach
well, see,
me.
This
is
why I'm getting
like,
kind of... I'm a little salty about the project right now, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because it was approached as a documentary. Oh, what do you have to do for a documentary? You just kind of sit around, be yourself, and someone who hopefully knows what they're doing later on stitches the whole thing together into some Frankenstein of sense-making.
Right. It can't be that hard.
Now, I think that's still what it's going to...
Ideally. But now we're writing sketches, and we're doing...
You guys are writing sketches?
We're doing writing
Don't worry about what we're doing, okay?
Hey.
Don't try to weasel your way in.
Hey.
Come on.
I was just
Don't be getting ideas with your sketchbook.
Asking.
Yeah, so I'm still, like, I still don't really know who's at the wheel here. Like, if they are kind of leaning on us to figure out what is going on, or if we are counting on them to put this thing together. And
I think that first day they get here, they're going to set up, they're going to film the finals, the year-end finals. Mm-hmm. I think Thursday, okay, that's when we're going to figure out what it is. Like, they will have already filmed some of it, and they'll be like, well, none of you won, so how do we spin that onto the DVD?
Ideally, like, I don't know if I even want to be in the movie. I kind of hope that they, like, latch on to, like, you know, this Pat Bell guy is unfucking real. Yeah, and they just follow Pat, fire. And the whole movie becomes about Pat Bell's life.
With
and
these other comics, like,
could you see? Oh, listen. Could you see Jacob hitting like Thursday? And like, listen, these guys think Pat Bell is the guy.
Sorry, guys.
Well, and we're all out. Or like, even Nick, he'd be like, "Nick's my new friend." Hey, Nick's my new friend.
I'd be good with that.
Jacob told me to take those days off of work, and I was like, "Man, it's in the holidays. I can't just drop 2 days. I'm gonna need to drop other days."
Yeah.
And so, but Jacob already gave me the opportunity. He actually, like, offered
really?
He
approached you.
The noodle in route. No, it was a quick Facebook message, and he was like, "Well, if you take off the days," he was like, "so have you thought about how you're going to make it in the documentary?" And I was like, "No, not really, because I think I've seen the way
He's such a great hype man.
I've seen the way, though, that all the comedians get whenever there's, like, a camera shows up at Yum Yums or Hoodies or something. Everybody has this, like, this just desperation stank that reeks off of them, and so I'm like, you know what? Like,
see,
I know that I'm going to be at the finals. I know that I know everybody who's involved.
Right, right.
I might wind up on camera.
Sure.
I will inevitably wind up on camera during the shooting of the footage, and then I may or may not in whatever the hacksaw job of it. That's the thing, is that they could spend 20 minutes talking to any one of you guys or any one comic of it, and then they'd be like, "Holy shit, this guy gave us a really good, concise narrative framework when we asked him, hey, what's it like to be a stand-up comic?"
Right.
And then everything else becomes coverage footage in between. Like,
I kind of feel bad for him because, like, a lot of time when people who are making a documentary don't really know what it's about until much, much later.
Right.
And it's kind of a shame that they're stuck to us five knobs instead of the whole scene because I feel like what's going
to
happen.
So humble of him to say, isn't it?
Well, I mean, we'll get to that in a second. But the thing is, like, they're stuck to us five. You know, what's going to happen if, like, Patrick Richardson or Connor Farrell, who have a very good shot, roll into town,
listen
win
to me.
The freaking contest,
both of those
town.
Guys, I'm going to pummel. Connor especially, no respect for that guy.
Oh, come
I
on.
Hope he's back.
Come on.
I'm going to trash him. I'm going to embarrass that guy on stage.
Well,
Connor, he's saying this with love in his
he
eyes.
He wears a hot dog suit to work for Halloween.
Love.
What kind of comedy is that? I'm going to crush that guy.
There's hate in his words,
just wait.
Connor.
Connor Farrell, I'm coming for you.
But there's a twinkle.
Jaden Smith watching.
Yeah.
No.
There's a twinkle.
Well,
but what
out of all five... Out of you five knobs.
How much do you miss Connor, though, for real?
Oh, quite a bit.
Oh,
quite
man.
A bit. He's awesome.
I miss having Connor,
yeah. Yeah, I know. He's killing. He's
but
he's
the best. You five knobs are a good sampling of the comedy community.
Well,
you know?
See, that brings me back to the humble comment. The other thing I'm not looking forward to this thing. I'm not a big personality offstage. I'm kind of boring. I'm kind of quiet.
Wait.
Not particularly
you're
funny.
You're boring?
A little bit, yeah.
Why do we keep having you on the podcast?
I don't fucking know, guys. I don't know.
Sorry, folks.
This
we,
is a really bad
we
choice.
We hadn't listened back. We
but if Jacob's
exciting.
Emails are any indication, I'm not killing it in the podcasting world. So,
does he email you hateful things? We'll never do that.
Urban?
Yeah.
No. Urban, I don't think cares I exist. So far
they picked you.
That's, sure, but... I feel
he
like
picked you.
You're one of the knobs.
You.
You're
one of
the
knobs.
Yeah,
I'm one of the five knobs. But I don't know. I think off stage,
I think
probably
Jacob's
the
thinking
least
was,
interesting person.
All right, so it's Dan Jones, Ryan, and I, Mike Hochbritz. All right, so the thinking was new, entertaining guy to the scene, Mike Hochbritz.
who's been doing it for a while and has done some others.
But yeah, he's like the new personality, right?
New stranger.
New personality. Dan new is the old personality favorite. He's the local favorite, whatever. And then you have Ryan and I. It's like equally started around the same time. Who's going to be funnier? Probably Weston. I think that's probably the angle that he's like... like leaning towards.
It's almost
see,
the arc of.
He said he's going in a different direction to me, but I don't know. I don't know if that's where he's going. So I'm just.
That's
I'm
just how I read
so
it.
So how long have you been relatively doing comedy?
Well, he's right. We basically started probably a month apart.
Yeah, wow. We started really close, and like I've really enjoyed like just coming up with Ryan.
Yeah, it's been fun.
You always hear people talk about coming up in comedic circles and. You look around, then it's like, all right, who started around the same time? And Ryan was just a month or...
Well, it's true. It really does imbue, like, this fondness for people. Like, even if your styles are completely different.
Right.
Even if
absolutely.
It's like, that guy.
Well, I was trying to explain it to my coworker that I was having drinks with earlier. You know, that it's like, we're totally different styles.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some kind of weird, like... Oh, here's how that joke would be better. And like you've given me taglines for jokes or helped me think of the Westboro shit. You know, I always think back to it was one of the ones that I tried for a really long time. So it's like, oh, that is pretty funny. And I tried it on stage. And it also helped me realize a lot of when people give you insights to stuff and you try it, it's like it feels weird to do somebody else's joke on stage. You know
well, it's
I mean?
Like sure. somebody else's sure. tag because it's all of a sudden you are borrowing their logic.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, like I realize that whenever I talk to anybody about comedy writing or and it doesn't mean that I've stopped doing it.
Right.
But I feel that it's important that I'm aware of what I'm doing because some people don't possess the same awareness. But the instant you start talking to somebody about, oh, and your one joke that's like this or this or that, what you can't help but be doing is approach their material with your comedy writing brain.
Yeah.
But it only means if, the way I take it, if somebody gives me some feedback and they say tagline or whatever, it just means that they're engaged with what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And they're
Absolutely.
Thinking. And that's
Absolutely.
What you want, and that's how other comics...
Well, and it's so cool because sometimes somebody will give you a piece of advice and it opens up a whole new end
Absolutely.
Of that joke, and you'd be like, holy shit.
Oh, yeah, I never thought of
it. I've been thinking about it on this one track, and this person is just blown over.
You usually get some drunk asshole yelling from the crowd, like, the hamburger! You know, I could almost think about it on stage, like, that won't work.
Yeah. That was dumb.
But that's kind of the best part about comedy is that the reward is all your own, but when someone does give you advice that it's like, oh man, you know, you are, in a certain sense, limited to your perspective and your little, you don't have anyone to interact with. So when someone does come to you with advice and it's better than your own joke, there is a certain degree of like ego blow where it's just like, oh Jesus, they wrote my own joke
better
than I did.
It's not even.
But at the same time, it's like it's like yeah, that is funny.
I never even think about it in terms of better.
Oh sure,
but it is
sure.
I mean.
Or you
have to really try and not think about it in terms of better. There is an obvious, like... And there are versions, too, where I hear it and I feel so totally disrespected by some comedian.
Sure.
Because they'll tell me and it's like, yeah, but I don't do your comedy.
Right.
You know? And so, and that depends to the degree of, like, is it a tag?
Yeah.
Is it an idea that they don't even have in joke form?
Instead of better, I think it's more that it illuminates the idea that you were discussing for more people in a clearer, more concise, and funnier way.
Boom. That's a... Wow.
Yeah.
You took the words out of my mouth and made them better.
So Ryan told me, I was doing these jokes about the Westboro Baptist Church, about how the fuck do they decide who has signs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was making jokes about it, whatever. And Ryan came up to me at Hody's one night, and he's like, you should say they have some kind of raffle. You know, like they're drawing off, like, all right, who gets the God Hates Fags sign? And like they're like, yeah, I got the God Hates Bag song. Boom, read it, weep it, bitches. Read it and weep. Just like celebrating.
Yeah.
Like it's such a great idea. I tried to do it a few times. I was like, I just can't do it. I don't know. It just never really worked.
I get it.
I loved the idea that they were having like some competitive, just asshole-ish in their church basement.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
They want their kid to have the most hateful sign.
Well, and that becomes,
that's a badge of honor.
And
that
becomes
I love
a fascinating
that idea.
Thing because that's not necessarily joke that I could actually hear you delivering either.
Not necessarily.
So it's like a thing where it's like, oh, if I was Weston and had that joke and did comedy the way Weston did it, I would use this line, you know?
It's always one of those things, weird... though. Exactly, yeah, where it's always like a kind of a take-it-or-leave-it advice, I think. That's how I take it, anyway, when anyone...
Oh, absolutely.
Because I think that's the best way to take it. And a lot of the time, it's not... I don't think when people do that, at least when they've done it to me, like, I have this tag, I have that tag, for a joke I tell, I don't take it as, like, they're saying, I think this is funnier. I take it as, like... from the benefit of not being stuck in your brain.
Right.
Like, I speak from the perspective where I just heard this as a total stranger, right, right. And I think this
Hey, but did you ever think about, you know, and that's yeah. sometimes that's
Well,
really
I want to talk about one of your jokes in a second, but Uh-oh. It circles me around to the other time where I approached you, because I value any time Ryan puts some input into a joke. And one night at Yum Yum's, I got up, he was hosting, so I got up on the after part. So it's not like people are filtering out. And so this is the best time. If you want to try your worst shit.
Whatever, yeah.
Go try it. Yeah. And Ray Rice had just punched his girlfriend out of an elevator. I was like, I'm going to do some jokes about that. Because I think it's a funny thing that all of a sudden, because it's on camera, right. all of a sudden we care about it.
Right.
So much you know worse, what I mean? Yeah.
And so I went up and I did some Peterson jokes about hitting his kids. Which I really like.
I still love that joke.
People freaked out. When
of course you hit all of them.
Of course he hit all his kids.
That's the thing.
He hit his other kid too?
People shut down, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's not without merit. Right.
So I said to Ryan after, I was like, I need some help writing these jokes because I need to do it in a smart way. You know? Like, it has to be done in a smart way. Mm. It can't just be like... People are like, wait, are you pro-hitting kids? Like, no, I'm making fun of people who hit kids.
Right. But
like in a Tosh type way where
also,
you act like you agree with it.
Right. There's also a thing where you fundamentally, can't get too bent out of shape about that because it is like, this is a fucking comedy show. Right. These people are at a comedy show.
Right.
They should get that I don't mean every word that comes out of my mouth.
But
right,
know, like,
but this is open mic. It's different than, you want to hone it to where it's good.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. And it's a rough thing where it's like, you know, hitting your kids is very like culturally... a divisive thing where some people really do feel that that's the way to go. But if you hit just one of your kids, you're legitimately a psychopath.
You're the worst. Yeah. Like, poor little Stevie.
Right.
Steven's going to regret what you just did.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, oh, all right, so Louis has some great jokes about hitting kids. And it's like, I try to do some spanking jokes at Jalazi. Mm. May it rest in peace.
Oh, Jalazi.
I tried to do some spanking jokes in an ice cream shop in Fort Collins on college. Did not go well.
That was
there were
a rough
pregnant
place.
Women in the. It was not a comedy atmosphere. But anyway.
No, it was not.
But I learned, it's like, Louis fucking nailed the spanking your kids. This was more of like an awareness thing. Like, don't fucking hit kids. Don't hit them, guys. Right. We need to teach people not to hit your kids. Don't hit your kids.
Yeah.
And I was like, Ryan, how do I make that funny? Because that's just, it felt a little ranty. It felt a little like, don't fucking hit kids. That's the point of the story.
I feel like that's where most good bits come from, though. It's just like some incident, some inciting incident where it's just like, I have a million things to say about
something
that
you feel really passionate about and want to make people aware of, and then you realize that you have to dilute it to make it at all palatable. You know?
Yeah, you have to care less.
This is a really spicy soup of morality that I am serving up. Gotta put some flour in it. Gotta water it down a little bit. I think if there's something that sweetened it
the
a little
paprika.
Bit. Yeah, you know.
A bit too much zinc.
Yeah, there's a lot of pepper.
Right.
This thing came out with a lot of pepper.
Please tell me when I gave you advice, I said, a lot of pepper.
Put more pepper in that.
Needs more pepper. Needs more pepper, but also like a bell pepper.
Sure.
Chopped up.
Sure.
I think that would diffuse it a little bit.
Some zest with
it. Well, see, here's the thing about doing those jokes. They were clean jokes. Mm. Like, I didn't swear. I didn't say... But the shit I was saying was more like, oh, is that funny? Can we laugh at that?
See,
I didn't swear at all.
I had a really, rather painful experience where I learned that the corporate comedy audience, like, if you're doing a corporate party, you can do clean... And I can do clean just fine, but the audience wants more than
It's more
clean.
About taste.
They don't want dark.
They want you to have some fucking puppets.
They don't want subversive. Yeah. More than anything is really what it is they want good, palatable,
subversive.
They want a innuendo. They want kind of fun ribbing.
Yeah,
they
like don't want... oh, we loosen up. You know, nobody's really actually looking for at a corporate event or anything. And even a lot of times at just general comedy shows,
right?
People aren't actually looking for you to do anything that's going to have an impact on their worldview.
Yeah.
They don't... A lot of times, people simply don't want to think.
Yeah.
That's the magic. And if you look at, like, the difference between, for instance, Seinfeld and then Curb Your Enthusiasm...
Right.
...is Seinfeld is a show that was much more benign and pedestrian in terms of what it actually made you think about. Mm-hmm. And it occasionally got it in edgewise.
Revolutionary for the...
And then Curb Your Enthusiasm was far more like... Hey, no, we're gonna broach these topics,
right?
You know, and
head
you
on,
watch that, and it's like, and you, it's a and little bit of a decade difference, but then it's also like Larry David being like, "Fuck it, I don't want to play ball with a network anymore."
Probably
so
your network too.
Take me to a premium place, and we aren't gonna beat around the bush,
right?
Because Seinfeld would always cleverly glimpse at, you know, you'd realize by the end of a subject, but a lot of it in that show about nothing. And telling people, advertising it, that it's the show about nothing, mm-hmm. is actually so reassuring and palatable.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that's why so many people, I'm convinced, really didn't like their season finale. And that they all got sent to jail for laughing at somebody that was a poor.
That was the problem with it, though. Because what people were doing the entire run of that show was relating to everyone. Because it was all social minutiae, where whether or not how the characters acted from there... was relatable. It was the encounter, that initial, like, that nuance that happens, the awkwardness.
Well,
that,
and then you think about what all of the characters were. Obviously, right. Jerry Seinfeld is a funny conduit for the everyman, but then Elaine, George, and Kramer are all operating out on these, like, crazy id-based levels.
Yeah,
you know, they're sort of
these
manic, bizarre... archetypes
right
getting right. pushed through this situation that right. is initially relatable, and then they make a series of decisions and hilarity ensues.
Yeah.
And the degree to which you can relate to, you know, I think George Costanza is a fascinating character because it's like you look at the number of episodes that you can really relate to Georgia and then the number of episodes you can't relate to him at all. And then right. the number of episodes where you can relate to him for like the first half.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh no.
Don't do it, George.
You're off the rails.
And that Curb Your Enthusiasm is that feeling just
all the time.
Magnified
all the time.
And stretched out to its
You watch it and you're like, "Oh, well, I see where George Costanza came from now and
there's nothing around that." Yeah. I'm good.
Budweiser?
I got it.
All right, Lana, I'll have it for now.
All right,
Lana, you hold on to that.
All right, so tell me one of your recent jokes. I've heard you do it at Hody's. I don't know how much you've worked on it, because I've only heard you do it once.
Uh-oh.
But it was a story about finding a wallet.
Oh, yeah.
Is this a true story?
It is, actually.
Was that the first time you did the joke?
No.
At Hody's?
No, that's actually a pretty old joke. That was probably...
Was it really?
Yeah, one that I did probably the fifth or sixth time I was up.
Isn't it nice to dust off sometimes the old things that you're like, I know that I thought this was funny somehow. Actually, I found a one-liner just recently in the notes field of my phone, and I was like, this is good. I was like, why haven't I been...
What's here?
Well, now I've hyped it up, so it's...
It's going to be shite. But...
So, yeah, it'll be a real turd. But be like, hey, have you guys ever thought about what happens when porn stars find Christ and quit the biz? Do they have to give up all their cool moves?
That's pretty good.
And I found it embedded from, like, last March, you know, in the notes field of my phone. And I was like, what the fuck?
Right.
This is great. And it was one of those moments where I've got Lord knows how many notes.
Right.
And so I just scrolled back through and I picked it random and I opened that up. And I was like, you're a cut up, Nick. So how did it go? Is this the first time you've resurrected really old material?
I do it infrequently. Like I try and keep the flow of new stuff fairly constant. I think part of the problem with having such a small comedy crowd in a lot of our open mics, a lot of repeat customers, And the problem now of having way fewer mics than we did a year ago, I mean, we were talking before the show, we have basically an open mic.
Right.
Because nobody's using...
What true open mic?
Yum yeah. Yums is too... It's, there's too much weight on it to... Well, and...
I was thinking that we get a better feel of it. Sure. It's like, no, you should just show up.
Yeah.
Well, there's plenty of time for everybody.
When I do
there should
show
be 20
up,
people there every
occasionally.
Week.
Occasionally.
Yeah, ideally.
There's seven this last week. There should be 20. Easy.
Well, it was the week of Thanksgiving, though, so that kind of makes sense.
Well, I haven't had more than... seven contestants, though.
Really?
No.
I usually
not
get
contestants.
I usually get about 10 or 11.
Total? Or contestants?
Yeah. Contestants. Hmm. Yeah. But yeah, I try and cycle through stuff, and I get really discouraged with bits as they come in. So, you know, you come up with something, it's the greatest idea ever, you work it a little bit, you do it on stage a couple times, it does what new bits do, and... You know, people just kind of stare at you. And then I shelve a lot of stuff, bring it back later. That was one of my first bits, but it was one of those things where I came back to it later and was like, oh, this is what's funny about this. Or at least...
It's a great story.
What I thought. I think it's a little long. I think I need to cut it down a bit.
I don't know. See, but you had a real conversation with somebody who you found their wallet.
I did. The joke is... The incipient moment of the joke was I found their wallet, and there was this delay between me trying to find out who they were and me getting into contact, of me just like, God damn, I'm just an awesome person right now.
Yeah. That's a great line.
I'm gonna return
who hasn't
it?
Felt like that? Anytime you do anything, like you put a shopping cart back in the stall,
yeah.
You just have this moment of like...
Oh, just this shitty
I
thing,
am
right?
A great fucking human
you
being.
You know what? Right now, if God does exist, this is one of those moments. Yeah. He's right. Looking down at me, and right. He's like... Nick is doing this despite the fact that he doesn't believe in me.
Correct.
Good on you, Nick. On you. And then I'm always like, thanks, maybe God, you know?
To me, that's like, the joke.
Oh, this is why people recycle. Ooh, it's
the
not
joke
because
is,
of the same planet, but they want to feel good about themselves.
I think that your joke is you have this great feeling for doing something good. And then it leads you through this, like, just shit. Like,
it's like
calling
oh,
different
being
shitty
a good
people
human being
and like,
is
God
such a
damn
chore.
It. You guys are all shitty. I felt so good about myself, and this is way more work than I wanted for finding a
I could just go back. I could just reset.
I'd rather just leave the wall.
Just leave
it there.
Just leave it there.
I'm going to go misplace it.
Yeah.
Right where it was.
Obviously, the
misplaced.
Guy who lost it doesn't care about it
doesn't
nearly as much.
Not invested. Invested.
Oh, no, that really takes the wind out of your sails when you're trying to be a good civic agent for prosperity for all of the human race. And then you realize the human race isn't that self-interested.
Not
you know?
Worth it. Yeah.
Hey, so actually this thing of dusting off old material, this, that, everything, mm-hmm. it makes me want to bring up with both of you here a conversation that Weston told me he sort of had with you.
Uh-oh.
In which he said that he was going to kind of finish up, record, put a nice bow on, and then set aside most of the material that he'd written up to this point in time, or at least his your go-tos. Your
heavy
hitters.
I could probably get 40 minutes.
And,
I could probably get 40.
And so, and he
you
told me...
40 in 3 nights?
Yeah.
10, 10, 10, 10, 12, 12. I'll always go over.
Of the,
so that's
the,
not...
the upcoming string of...
Yeah, yeah. So, and I want these guys to record it on video, and then that's it. Like, time to write some new fucking jokes.
Well, and
that's
he
it.
Told me that you initially took a little bit of umbrage to that.
Yeah.
That
I,
you were a little shocked at the idea that he was going to discard...
Which I was surprised
such a great
about.
Body of...
Like, I thought Ryan, being the writer, would be like... Good job.
Well, also,
he was like, what are you doing?
Also, you guys being on such similar timelines,
right.
That's really why I wanted to bring this up.
I don't think I like the tone, first of all. But
I don't like your tone.
Did you listen how neutral my tone was?
Were,
I was doing that
flat
affect.
You were very diplomatic. It was solid.
That's some
no, this is a great
shit.
Conversation, because I talked to Cody, too. I was like, I really want to get some feedback on what you think about doing that. And even... Like,
what did Cody say?
Yeah. What
no, I didn't tell her the thing. I just said, I want to run something by you. She was kind of on her way out.
Oh, okay.
Okay. We'll let us
know. So someday you'll have that conversation.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Like, no, but... And I haven't asked anybody but, like, people I would really enjoy their, you know,
their feedback. Right? Yeah, yeah.
I'm not just like, hey, everybody. You know all those jokes you love? You know all those jokes you love?
They're gone.
Could be going away. They could be.
So, I'm of...
I just wonder what it would be like.
I'm of two minds of it. I agree with, like, putting away stuff that you know is a sure bet. So that you don't lean on it as a crutch. At the same time, I mean, that's the thing that Louis C.K. does, Patton Oswalt does, George Carlin did for so many years, Bill Burr does it, where, you know, you run the same bits for a year, you hone it for that year, you do a special at the end of the year, then you close it out, it's done, period. I think the big difference is with ourselves and them is that they've been doing it for so long that there's a sure-footedness and a comic sensibility that they've honed with 10 years that we simply don't have. You're a very funny dude.
No,
I think I'm fairly funny, but I do think there are things you learn specifically about joke writing and working material that only comes with just hammering through this thing for years and years.
Like doing the same joke for a couple years, a few years?
No, just doing comedy for years and years.
Right. Where but you don't you?
I
don't you think
it,
you
I
would
think
learn
it keeps
more?
His writing tools sharp.
Yeah,
I
you got to keep
as
like,
opposed to as
sharp.
Opposed to
say
as
sharp.
Opposed to throwing them out with the waste bin. I kind of imagined when he pitched it to me, because I was very for the idea.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oh shit, you're putting these jokes in the deep freezer.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that if you're ever going to do them for like a showcase or a show you've asked to be on or because you might want to dig up some of the old shit that
sure.
has landed and is solid, you know you're going to have to dust them off.
Sure.
You know? And, but that the idea of putting yourself through the paces of writing new material,
mm-hmm.
being able to like, all right, from scratch. Because the thing is it's so easy, especially now that the state of our current comedy community is so many less open mics.
Mm-hmm. Less opportunity.
And you even would see it when this town was, like...
booming.
Fat with open mics.
Yeah.
Was you'd get people that were too comfortable telling the same 2 to 3 jokes
mm-hmm.
and then maybe slipping in a new one. And it's like, to just be like... hack, slash, and burn.
Mm-hmm.
I have some really old recordings from like, well, not really old, but like recordings of like a year ago,
mm-hmm.
a year and a half ago on my phone. And I listen back and I'm like, oh, that's great material.
Right.
Maybe I could start to cycle that back
sure.
in.
Sure. I just think it's too soon to. I mean, the other thing is that Louis C.K., Bill Burr, all that, those guys can get time anywhere. And they can get as much time as they want anywhere. So they're running those jokes in the course of that year significantly more than we are.
Well, it's also their
you know,
fucking job.
All right.
Right.
Yeah. So can I tell you why I think this is almost, for certain people, not for everybody, I do think there are some people who have to have some jokes written out, and they just do those. That's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's two things you learn. It's how to write a joke or be funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of comedians, you know, like people even I look up to, even in our circle, like Dan. Dan's just a funny guy.
Yeah, Dan.
He's just going to be funny.
See, and that's
just
why.
Just put Dan up in front of people. He's funny, right?
Yeah.
And so once you learn how to, that stage presence of, it's like total comfortability.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if you're as goofy as Dan or, you know, as serious as Ryan. Like, I think I'm probably somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
I've tried to act more, especially hanging with Nick. I'm always like, how can
you,
I act stuff
you
out
You have a very
more?
Comfortable stage presence.
Yeah. So I think that's one thing you learn. I think the other thing is how to write a joke and be funny. And if you can get the stage presence down, then, yeah, every year you should be able to just, you should challenge yourself. I'm going to come up with funny shit.
I think,
five
I think
minutes a month? I can't come up with 5 minutes a month?
I think that's not imbibing the material with too much of what your power is. You can be like, I wrote that, that's a brilliant fucking joke. There's no reason I can't churn out a few more of
those. And I'm still going to improve on the stage presence thing. I'm not saying I've made it. I'm just saying that'll improve. But I got that down.
I think,
so I can try new stuff easier.
I think, too, that it's a mental state where the more disposable you make your actual material, the more your bread and butter becomes your stage presence, your crowd work, this and that. That's why I go up so many nights
with
nothing.
Disagree with any of this, but I do think that it's a bit early to be throwing out like your core material.
Why? It's not going to be on a video. I'm not doing it for anything. It's just open mic shit.
And I think
I'm
too,
just throwing
I think
out,
throwing
open mic
out
shit.
Is an interesting, because I call it shelving.
Sure.
Yeah. I told him that I would probably put it.
These jokes are as good as I can make them at the present time. Let's, you know, stick them over here.
Well, let me give you an example. My best joke that I've come up with in a year is probably like a 6-minute, if I really strung it out, about the gay football player. Right? It's been like the joke I've done. I'll get the most laughs. Felt good. Confident about it.
Did it at Comedy Works.
Yeah. It did it at Comedy Works. It's my best joke. So it was my best one, right? And I'm ready to, like, all right, that's going away. Because I feel like I can write a joke that's as funny as that. Mm-hmm. But a lot of that joke, to me, represents, like, how I learn how to be comfortable on stage.
Right.
And just, like, I told the joke because I do think it's ridiculous that we're worried about gay people playing sports.
Sure.
But that's an attitude, you know? Like, that's a thought. And I want to get to that place in a lot of my other jokes, where it's something I really believe in, and not necessarily just like I'm talking about. I don't know.
So, what kind of timeline are we talking about, though? Like, so you shelve those jokes? Is it? Are you just not going to look at them for another year? Or are you going to?
No, I think I might use them if, like, I was on a book show and they're like, "All right, you want best 20?" I'm like, "Well, those are my best." All right, so
you dust them off. You practice them.
I go back. I do, but I know I've done them so many times. I've done them to, like.
Right,
you know,
if you're
going to
use them on showcases as well.
Yeah.
I think, too, though,
I got to write some more. It's a challenge to write more.
Especially when
you've
got a
solid 15
in
your pocket. How many people do we see, though, in the open mic circle?
And they're
just comfortable.
Colorado,
they're just comfortable with theirs. And that's where I'm like, I want to challenge myself to get rid of that shit, write new shit, write it.
I have to say, too,
it's
that
a year
the best
in.
Service,
I'm a year in. We're
the best
a year
service
in,
you
know?
Could give those jokes to is, and I feel this way about a lot of my own jokes, and I do it. I make sure they're recorded somewhere. I make sure that I'm not going to totally, that I can rediscover them somewhere.
Right.
Put a joke in a time-sealed vault for like 3 to 6 months or something. Have the vault crack back open. Look back at it. Be able to write at that joke with all of the new lessons you've learned.
Well,
so that you're not performing that joke as the solid state, like, oh yeah, this is a joke I did that was pretty good as a comedian a year ago. It's like, this is a joke that I wrote 2 years ago that I'm continuing as a comedian to work on and
it's
learn
funny.
And
I
you gotta believe in it. That's my big thing. You gotta believe in your jokes.
Well, and I tend to cycle things about every 3 to 6 months, where it's like...
Gotta tell you, I miss your X-Men joke.
See, every time I've done
discriminatory
the X-Men joke, it just doesn't hit with people.
Oh, well, it's because it's...
Do you know how hard it is to bomb at Comedy Works?
Yes.
The crowd
I've done it.
Yeah.
I've done
the
it.
Crowd that warm, that's that excited to see comedy. X-Men joke ate shit at
Comedy Works. It's almost like a corporate show, except you're supposed to be obscene.
Right.
At Comedy Works, you're supposed to be obscene, and you're supposed to make them think minimally.
Right.
Weston honestly pulled it off very well. I think it's honestly because Weston has an opinion that is not outrageously different from a lot of people's opinions, a lot of thinking people's opinions, and he expresses it very well. But him doing that well with that edgy of a joke at Comedy Works is a little bizarre because it's a joke that is supposed to make people think.
Yeah.
And any sort of joke, though, that is too much thought, I mean, the fact of the matter is don't you just say can make a 9/11 with his eyes? Or shoot a 9/11 out of his eyes?
9/11 rocketing out of his face.
Okay. Great comic phrase.
Sure.
I love it. 9/11, you could just highlight it in every joke, and you could just listen to the transcripts of comedy clubs all over, right. And you could hear the decibel, you could watch, you know, if you had some, like, audio decibel chart, you'd just be like, ooh, well, right where he said 9/11.
Believe me, when I did that, I did watch the decibel level chart. I've watched that little.
But I think that's the trick, is, like, finding that place in your Ray Rice joke, your Adrian Peterson joke, your 9/11 joke.
Mm-hmm. Or even just a joke where you use
your joke 9/11. Is funny. Mm-hmm. The joke about Adrian Peterson, people being shocked that he hit his second through sixth kids. Like, they're like, breaking news. Adrian Peterson hit another one of his kids. Like, yeah, of course he did.
Yeah.
He hit one of them. He has to be how twisted to just hit one of his kids. Like, go stand over there. I'm hitting your brother because of all the shit you did.
Here's no, you're good.
Yeah. Here's a crazy thing, too, when you think about it, is that that is why people pay money to go see Louis C.K. and Doug Stanhope. I got to bring up Doug Stanhope because he's a particular favorite of mine. And he does not. His special that's currently on Netflix is named Beer Hall Putsch. For the first time, Hitler riled everybody up to march on the Capitol. You know, that is the degree to unremitting. And, like, you know, he tells a story about helping his mother commit suicide because she was sick and old. And then using her credit cards for online shopping in the weeks following her death.
Right.
And so it's like, you look at it, and it's like, that's what people pay those comedians to see. Yeah. That's what they want to hear them do and see them do. And as all we are missing as open micers is the name brand and the stage presence. Now, a name brand is sort of given to you over time.
It's a catchphrase.
Name brand is sort of, in a way,
a lot of those guys, it's their first catchphrase they get.
It's a consistent product, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I think that the consistency is a big thing. And it is something that you have to train for and that you don't lean overly hard. I guess my reticence with your regimen is, I mean, we were kind of talking about this earlier, where the scene is so small now, not in terms of number of people doing it, but in terms of places where you can do it, that you really do have to cycle through stuff because you're not going to get the same reaction or even a fair reaction.
Once people know your joke,
that's the thing.
It's even more different as a comedian. And when there were so many mics,
once the comedians know your joke.
Right. I'd argue, though, the comedians have always known your jokes because they've been around the open mic. But
they're the most people that are there. They're the most there. And if you've done the same joke for 6 months, they're less likely to hang in the room.
Right.
They're
I would also say, though, that Yum Yums is more largely composed out of regulars.
Regulars.
Now, you guys host it.
Well, Hody's on has been, too.
Lately, it has. Yeah, it has we've been getting. But that, the thing is, you're not giving that joke a fair hearing if you're telling it. I mean, sometimes I'll stop telling a joke after 4 shows, 5 shows.
Honest to God, even amongst you guys. Even amongst the comics that I really like in Fort Collins, there'll be just a flip I switch in my head and it all goes to white noise.
But you don't want it to ruin the jokes. Not
doing other things.
You can step outside and somebody you like is up because you don't want it to ruin. Like, I've heard it a couple times and I really like it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I hear it a few more times, it's going to ruin it.
You do that, really. You step outside
I step outside for, and there's some people's jokes where it's like, oh, they should see me here in the back of the room. But then it's like, oh, I know that if they look at my face, you're going to get the deadpan. One of my greatest votes of confidence is when I walk outside. And then there'll be sometimes, or when I'm like half listening, and I'll be like, oh, this person's punching up. Also, they're having a great fucking night.
Right.
And then I'll go in a tentative field and want to, like, cheer them on and everything. But, for instance, Erdman's, when he won, it was a standout performance out of him. Out of jokes I'd already heard him tell some of the time. There was an energy in the room, like, within the first 30 seconds of his performance,
the comics
totally helped it. But I mean, I can watch
because we could see how well he was doing, and we start adding in the crowd gets into it. It really does become like it builds from the back.
From
stand up, and even people that I've paid good money to see do stand up that are like
acts that tour around and shit, and to your open micer, to people that I've seen in plays, both in local plays and then gone down to the Denver Center for the Performing Arts and paid overpriced for, you know, parking and tickets and everything, and ooh, a night at the theater and everything. Right. I can generally now, within the first minute of watching a person on stage, judge whether or not I'm going to like their performance.
Yeah.
And it causes me to invest
If a minute, because sometimes...
In stand-up, it's way shorter.
Yeah.
Stand-up, it's 30 seconds.
Yeah.
You know whether or not a person is going to hold your interest. Mm-hmm. Really, and they can win you back.
Yeah, they can.
But as somebody who kind of sees it often enough, does it, so I'm thinking about it from that angle, right, too, most of the time when I showed up.
Well, and there's
I'm judging.
All sorts of weird vibes that go on. You know when you're killing it and you have them completely.
Mm-hmm.
You know when you're dogging it, because that's the most obvious.
You know when a person goes up and isn't in the mental space to do a comedy show tonight, mm-hmm, be it an open mic or a feature. It's even more apparent when they're on, like, a showcase. And you also, though, know when a person walks up and they're like, this is going to suck pretty hard.
Right.
I'm about to eat the shit. And it's funny, somebody, a real friend of the show, so much of a friend that we actually pretended to feud with him, and it caused all of Ghost P's listeners to go away. Miles Harmony.
Greatest magician we know.
Miles Harmony.
He's great.
You can watch the difference, though, between a set.
He has the
when
most.
Miles is feeling it, and when Miles isn't feeling it,
yeah,
and although it'll be the same deadpan, stoic, static delivery,
yeah,
there is something.
There's a vibe.
And I get made fun of for this some of the times, but there's something, it's just magic in the air.
It's
the sheer cult of personality, right, or force of will or whatever, right, it is.
When one person exerts a force over the attention spans of everyone in the room, and you can feel it, and you know it.
Here's the funny thing about comedy, is you can tell when a comedian is surprised that he's wielding that power.
Oh, yeah.
Pat Bell is the king of this, where he will start to destroy a crowd, and he all of a sudden looks surprised, like, oh, shit, they're all laughing at my jokes. Yeah, dude, you're really fucking funny.
Also, you see people...
He just looks shocked. And sometimes they'll say, he's like, yeah, I am funny.
This is the sort of thing that we can name Pat, because he's a friend of the show, and we're casting a positive light on him. There are other people where you can't, and this is actually specifically a comic from Boulder or Denver, but down in that area, that I know you and I both saw at the Four Horsemen show not long ago. Again, I can't name him. But he seemed entitled to that force of will, cult of personality thing. He felt as though he deserved it, earned it, walked on the stage, walked into the place doing it. And because you could tell that he was putting that vibe out,
it was gross.
It was like,
that's true.
Oh, fuck off, dude!
You are not
the hot shit that you think you are.
And that's the thing where, like, desperation is usually great fuel for comedy, because it's only the nights when I'm like, I know what I'm doing. My material's great. I'm going to kill this. That there's this. Even if you vocalize your joke well, even if you tell it well, there's a vibe of like overeagerness.
Well, you don't want.
I got this.
You don't want no confidence, but you don't want all confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Because in all confidence,
not caring is really the ideal.
All confidence, the audience is not really part of the exchange,
right?
And I think that's it. Is that the greatest comic acts I've ever seen? For instance, we saw Oddball at Red Rocks.
Yeah,
and so Red Rocks is obviously a fairly giant venue to see a comedian in. There were tiny specks. Yeah, there was a camera up there. But it did. It made you feel the foreignness. But then Louis C.K. and Chris Hardwick and Dimitri Martin, some of
our favorites out of that. And Hannibal Buress, they did this thing where it was like, you're at a big show, and then parts of it also felt like a conversation. Mm-hmm. You know? And
Mark Maron.
It's like, but you see, to me, Maron actually did that far more poorly than Louis C.K. did in the idea of feeling that it was a conversation. But Mark Maron also did one thing that I had to give a lot of credit for, which is that he wound up crouched down at the front of the stage even more. So he made himself an even smaller speck in this already, like, grand. And so there was something, there was a poetic justice to what Mark Maron was doing. But Sarah Silverman sat in a handicapped woman's lap for most of her set at Red Rise. So, and that was weird because it was a weird voyeur combo and conversation.
You hit this point where it's the ideal point is where you're there for the audience, you're there for entertainment, but you don't need anything from them. You don't need their approval, but likewise, you don't need, you know, their silence. If you go into it without just being phased either way, I think that's the ideal.
That is why, that is ultimately why I am pro, no matter how long you've been doing it, casting jokes aside. Casting successful jokes aside.
See.
The number of times I've shit like a dog on stage just because it's like, oh yeah, that'll play. You know, and I've just been lost in a moment. I've been like, hey, Nick, shit like a dog on stage. That always sort of plays, at least.
I think we're on the same page. It's just, when I hear, after a year, throwing them all out, I hear, like, the Patton Oswalt thing, the Louis C.K. thing, where it's like, oh, I am never doing that joke on stage again.
Mm.
And that
I don't even necessarily wait a year. And I'd love to try and remember my mindset, although I was far younger and more immature when I hit the year mark of comedy, and so I know that
that
was
cloudy.
Did you hear
Roommate Will just screaming?
Just screeching. Roommate Will hates this
conversation. I don't know if it's picking it up.
Fucking loaded tonight. Like,
he's out of control. Everybody knows he's a baby.
Can you imagine just taking a bath?
No.
Screeching loudly?
I'm going to be the only one carrying forth this bit.
Okay, good. Good, I like that.
We won. We won.
He's smiling. He's smiling.
No, we won.
He knows he's been scared. But, where were we?
We're screaming at a baby, Ryan.
We're screaming at a baby.
What else do you think happens on this podcast?
This is the most popular ghost.
Look, we cut 20 minutes off of this podcast so we can scream at
babies. Scream at babies, yeah.
I really hope it's picking that up on the mic. Otherwise, it's
this is very odd and extremely annoying.
Was just better than anything we've recorded thus far. Maybe we should wrap it up. I mean, Will is best at us yet again.
Potentially.
Wow.
Thank you for coming on. You'll have to listen to the next time we have Ryan on.
Right.
You'll wish that this was still playing.
I'll see you on a DVD.
I'll see you on the YouTube preview.
Lobberies for like 6 days. Gold bottles, soul models, spilling ace on my sick gays. Also, her bitch behave. Just might let you meet gay. Shot towns, B-Rolls, moving the next BK. Also, her motherfuckers wanna find me. That shit great. That shit crack. That shit crack. So hard, motherfuckers wanna find me. That shit crack. That shit crack. That shit crack. She said, yeah, can we get married at the mall? I said, look, you need to crawl for your bar. Come and meet me in the bathroom style and show me why you deserve to have it all. Ball so hard, that she crack. That she crack. Ain't it Jay? Ball so hard, What she order? What she order? Fish fillet. So hot. Yo, whip so cold. So cold. This whole thing. So hot. Act like you ever be around motherfuckers like this again. Who's your girl? Grab her hand. Fuck that bitch, she don't wanna dance. She's my friends, but I'm in France. I'm just saying, Prince Williams ain't do it right if you ask me. Cause I was him, I would've married Kate and Ashley. Was Gucci my nigga? Was Louis my killer? Was drugs my dealer? What's that jacket, Margiela? Doctors say I'm the illest, cause I'm suffering from realness. Got my niggas in Paris, and they going gorillas, huh?
I don't even know what that means.
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
No, it's not. It
gets
gross.
The people going. Fall so hard, motherfuckers wanna find me.